Hey friends, Rick Green here, and I'm going to attempt to do the impossible, which is to give a three-hour talk on the timeless principles of liberty in about 30 minutes. So we may go pretty quick here. The good news is you can always hit rewind and back up and cover some of these things a little more in depth at a slower pace if you would like. Actually, I'm not going to try to give the whole talk on timeless principles of liberty. That's a little bit more in depth than what we have time to do here. But I do want to give you a little bit of a crash course on what we teach at Patriot Academy and how we teach the students to essentially to judge a piece of legislation, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, whether or not it's an appropriate function for government. Is it something they should support? And I know you might be saying, well, Rick, I'm not at Patriot Academy. I'm not a legislator. Why do I need to know that? Because as a citizen, you need to know how to measure the promises of the politicians, how to measure the policies that they're proposing, and how to measure the candidates themselves so you know if you're being a good steward of your responsibility as a citizen, a good steward of your vote, a good steward of your influence in the culture. When you say that something's a good idea or a bad idea, when you say that a candidate is a good candidate or a bad candidate, when you say that something that's going through Congress or your state legislature is a good thing or a bad thing. To do that, to measure those things, we need a plumb line. We need something to measure them by to say, okay, how do I know if a policy proposal on the annexation of local communities by a city and the way that they're proposing to do it is a good thing or a bad thing? How do I know if a tax proposal in Congress is a good thing or a bad thing? How do I know if a convention of states to propose amendments on the Constitution is a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, all of you take any issue, any policy, you need a paradigm to look through. You need a quick, easy way to look at that thing and figure out if it's good or bad. So at Patriot Academy, we do that with what we call the LIFT principles. It's a very, very simple, easy acronym, LIFT, and it stands for four basic principles that I'm going to give you a crash course on in the next 30 minutes. It's limited government, individual liberties, free enterprise, and timeless truths. Limited government, individual liberties, free enterprise, and timeless truths. Now, if we had time to talk about the timeless principles of liberty, I'd go back and give you some great Webster's Dictionary 1828 version definitions of timeless, of principles, of liberty, of why these four things help to preserve liberty and why they are, in fact, timeless. But let's just skip all that real quick and let me just say these are things that don't change. This is solid ground. These are principles that produce positive results every time they're tried. Every time. If you put these things in place, you can count on the fact that they produce good results. So let's just run through them very quickly. First of all, limited government. What does that mean? I mean, usually today when someone says limited government, most of us tend to think of that as the amount of money that is being spent by the government, but that's not what I mean when I say limited government. What I mean by limited government is actually jurisdictional lines. It's actually authority. In other words, you might have, let's say you're smart enough to drive a Dodge pickup truck like I do. Okay, you may drive something else. That's okay. Maybe you drive one of these, you know, fancy cars that is a hybrid and will go much further down the road than my truck will. I don't know. Whatever you drive, I want you to picture your vehicle right now. Now, if I were your neighbor and your vehicle was, let's say, a really cool royal blue color, and as your neighbor, I said, you know what, I think your vehicle would look a lot better in a really nice bright red. And so I just go to the hardware store and buy me about, 100 cans of bright red spray paint. And while you're not around, maybe you're inside, maybe you're asleep, I don't know, I just kind of come over to your house and say, I'm going to do my neighbor a favor. I think this truck would, or this car, whatever your vehicle is, would look a lot better in bright red. So I'm going to spend my money to buy the spray paint. I'm going to put my labor into it. I'm going to make your vehicle look a lot better. And so you wake up the next morning and you got a very poorly painted vehicle. Not only is it very poorly painted, it's not the color you wanted in the first place. It looks bad. And the question is, even if I thought I was doing something good for you, did I have the authority to do so? See, your vehicle is your jurisdiction, not my jurisdiction. Your driveway, that's your jurisdiction, not my jurisdiction. I don't have the authority. I don't have the right. I don't have the jurisdiction or the power to come over and dictate what your car is going to look like, or what your living room is going to look like, or how you raise your children, or how you mow your lawn, unless you live in one of these, you know, ridiculous homeowners associations where they tell you how to mow your lawn. But that's a whole other topic on property rights. The point is, limited government means limited defined jurisdictions. So you have certain jurisdictions where you have authority. I have certain jurisdictions where I have authority. And government has certain jurisdictions where it has authority. Your state government has certain authority in certain jurisdictions. Your federal government, your local government. Each level of government has a particular area of jurisdiction. And so what a limited government means is that in our particular form of a constitutional republic in our nation, that when we define and create a government, we give it or loan it certain powers, and we define the jurisdiction within which it can operate those powers. And as long as it's within that jurisdiction, it's still limited government. Now, it may spend a ton of money. I mean, in America, for instance, our Constitution does give authority to our federal government to spend money on national defense. Several clauses in Article 1, Section 8 specifically lay out the fact that government has to defend our nation. Well, in a nation of 330 million people and the land mass that we have, our government is going to have to spend billions of dollars to defend us. So there's a lot of money being spent there, but that doesn't mean we're outside of limited government. It's still a limited government if it's doing what we said in the Constitution that it should do. So spending a lot of money on a particular area could still be limited government. I'm not saying that's not a whole other topic in terms of how much they spend and having good watchdogs on government and trying to prevent waste and all those things. Those are all worthy, but that doesn't fit within the idea of limited government. So when we say limited government, what we mean is jurisdictions. And now, look, the opposite is true. The federal government can spend lots of money on defense and still be limited government. But if they spend $5, if they spend 50 cents outside of their jurisdiction, they're no longer limited. We specifically define what the American federal government is allowed to do in the Constitution. If they do anything that's outside of that for any amount of money, then they're no longer limited. They're outside of the limitations that we put on them. So I probably beat that horse to death, but that's limited government. So when we analyze legislation, or we look at a proposal, or measure a candidate's philosophy of good government, the first thing we look at is, does this fulfill the definition of limited government, or does it make it open-ended where government is beyond the authority of what the people asked it to do? And there's some things that the federal government is going to do better and maybe the only one that could actually do something at all. For instance, national defense. I mean, you can't expect each state to handle its own national defense. Well, maybe Texas. We could probably handle our own, but that's a whole other topic too. But you want national defense to be done at the national level. So that's an appropriate function for the federal government. On the other hand, the Founding Fathers believed, and I certainly believe, education is not something you can do at the national level. It's just too big. I mean, 330 million people, a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. trying to decide what we want to teach at the local level in my little town of Dripping Springs, Texas, or in your town in Washington or California or wherever you may live. I mean, it's crazy to think that the federal government can do that well and meet the needs of every local community in the country. So the Founding Fathers said that's not something we're going to put in the bucket of powers or in the jurisdiction of the federal government. That's why you don't see anything about education in the Constitution. That is left entirely to the states, or at least it was supposed to be. You know, clearly, we're way outside those boundaries because the U.S. federal government spends billions on education and micromanages and tells schools what they can do. And our last president even issued decrees telling schools, you know, which bathrooms students could use and all kinds of crazy things being done at the federal level. So that is definitely outside limited government. But right now, I just want you to grasp that concept of what the L in the LIFT principles is all about. It's limited government, meaning we are going to define what government can do. There's a whole nother talk that I'd love to get into that we just don't have time for about what does make good government. Okay, so if we're going to limit government and we're setting up a constitutional republic, then what powers should we give to government? What are the things that they should be doing? I would encourage you to read, you know, some of our other materials on this, or actually even just go read Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address. He goes through exactly what a good government would look like, what the sum of good government is. And I'll just rattle them off for you, and then hopefully you'll dive into some of our other materials to get more detail on that. But he said, number one, a good government acknowledges God. Number two, it exercises frugality, doesn't waste money, doesn't go into debt. Number three, it restrains the infliction of injury. So we that's a proper role of good government, is to prevent us from hurting each other. Number four, it encourages entrepreneurship and free enterprise. In other words, Jefferson's saying a good government is going to make sure that there's competition in the marketplace and make sure that there's not a government overreach trying to pick the winners and losers or tell you what you have to charge for your product or what features you have to put on your product. He said it should encourage entrepreneurship and free enterprise, not inhibit it. Number five, that it should protect the property and the earnings of its citizens. Notice that's very different from take the property and the earnings of its citizens. Very different from telling people what to do with their property or their earnings. In fact, it should protect those things. It should keep people from forcing you to do certain things with your money or your property. So that's the sum of good government, according to Thomas Jefferson. So let me just run through those real quick one more time. Acknowledge God. That's why our founding fathers publicly, not just privately, but publicly in the Continental Congress, they called on the nation to prayer. In the almost every president, frankly, every president up until the last one was calling the nation to prayer and having national days of prayer and all kinds of proclamations from founding fathers when they were governors. I mean, there's no question there was an acknowledgement of God that permeated this culture even through our government. Number two, exercise frugality. Number three, restrain the infliction of injury. Number four, encourage entrepreneurship and free enterprise. Number five, protect the property and earnings of citizens. So that's some proper things for government should do, that government should do. And those are things that we expect government to do when we set it up at the state level, the local level, the federal level, whatever it might be. So limited government means we do want government. We're not anti-government. We set up government to do those very things that I just listed. In our nation, our Constitution very specifically limits government to 17 enumerated powers. We lay those out, 15 of those in Article 1, Section 8 in the original Constitution. Two more get added with the 27 different amendments to the Constitution. And I do encourage you to take the full Constitution class we've got. It's available on our website at wallbuilders.com or rickgreen.com. It's about a 12-hour course, and we literally walk you through the entire Constitution, all of these different areas of Article 1, Section 8, every article of the Constitution, every amendment, so that you get a good 30,000-feet view and good understanding of these things and know where your freedoms are, you know how to recognize when they've been violated, and you know how to properly stand up and defend and assert those freedoms and those rights. So be sure and check that out, Constitution Alive with Rick Green and with David Barton. One other thing, Jefferson, I know I come back to Jefferson an awful lot, but here he is again on this question of limited government and jurisdictional powers. He said, in questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down with the chains of the Constitution. Actually, I left out a word. Bind him down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Here's what he's saying. He's saying, look, you may like the idea of representative government. You may want to have a republic. And so you elect leaders to go do the right thing. Bind him down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Here's what he's saying. He's saying, look, you may like the idea of representative government. You may want to have a republic. And so you elect leaders to go do the right thing. But don't put your confidence in man, he's saying. In questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. So what the Constitution does is it limits what that representative can go do. You may elect a great guy or gal to go be your representative at your state legislature or in city council or in Washington, D.C., but make sure that you have a good constitution that binds them down and prevents them from going outside the jurisdiction, the limited government that we define. Much more on that if you do Constitution Live. It's all the time we have right now in this particular talk. Let's move on to the next one, which is individual liberties. So the LIFT principles lay out four basic principles that will allow you to decide whether a policy, a politician, a proposal is a good idea or bad idea. And the first thing you ask is, does it protect and preserve limited government? Does that level of government that is offering this proposal, does it have authority in that area? I can tell you, as a state representative, I would sit at my desk and a bill would come across and I'd look at that bill and the first question I would ask, do I have authority to even consider this proposal? Not is it a good proposal, but first of all, is this an area that I even have authority? Is this something that's actually left to the community, local community, or to the family, or to the church? Or is this something the feds should be doing, not the state? As a state legislator, I had to ask, do I have authority? So always ask, is it meeting the requirement of limited government? Then ask, does it protect individual liberties? And what do I mean by individual liberties? I think maybe the best way for you to think about this and kind of go through in your own mind what are some individual liberties you would want to protect and preserve is just imagine if you were starting over as a nation or a community or a culture. I mean, just imagine that you were literally stranded on an island for the rest of your life with 50 or 60 other people, and you had to form a society. You're going to have to start over and form a society and build your lives together. Lots of books and movies and TV shows that kind of capture this. I always think of Lost, the TV series. If you ever watched Lost, it's a perfect example. You're stranded on this island with all these people, and you got to start figuring out how we're going to interact together. What kind of government are we going to have? What are the rights and things we're going to protect among each other? You think about all kinds of different books and even older stories. I mean, you can go to Lord of the Flies or even some of the recent movies like Divergent and Hunger Games, and you think of these post-apocalyptic worlds, right, where they had to reform society and start over. If you were in that situation, what would you want to make sure was protected? What would be your Bill of Rights, if you will? What would be most important to you? Would you think about things like freedom of religion? And freedom of conscience, being able to believe what you believe and to live out that belief, being able to worship as you choose, being able to act on your beliefs and actually not just say that I adhere to this particular faith, but it actually informs my decision-making, how I treat other people and serve other people and all of those different things. So freedom of religion, most people would put way up there on the list. Freedom of speech, same thing, that you could not only have those ideas, but you're free to disagree or free to make your positions known. Maybe, you know, freedom of the press, maybe freedom of assembly, being able to gather with the people that you're like-minded with and not be allowed to gather with them, or perhaps forced to only gather with people that you don't necessarily agree with or see things alike. And so that freedom of assembly is a very important thing that we have in our First Amendment here in the U.S. Maybe it's a freedom to petition your government for a redress of grievance. So that right to actually disagree with government, to lobby government, to push for government to change and do something in a different way because of your particular belief. I would put way up there on my list of rights that I would want to protect, those individual liberties, would be the right of self-defense, the I believe God-given biblical right to defend yourself and your family. Very, very important concept that our founders here in America were adamant about, that they thought it was something that you couldn't give that away, that was a natural right that God had given to you. And so that self-defense right was huge, very, very important. When I talk about all these different things, none of them do you any good if you don't have a right to life first, right? Sam Adams was, basically the father of the American Revolution. He said government was originally designed for the preservation of the unalienable rights first, a right to life, because what good is liberty in the pursuit of happiness if you don't have life, right? So you got to have life, and you got to protect that life at government level. So first, a right to life, he said. Secondly, he said, to liberty. And thirdly, to property. So those are all individual liberties, to own property, to do with that property as you wish, to have the liberty to move and live as you wish, and of course that right to life. So those are all individual liberties, that right of self-defense. I mean, we could go on and on and on. There are things like the right of due process, the individual liberty and individual protection that you would have the right to defend yourself in court if the government came after you, if you were sued. I mean, all those things. If you think about the Bill of Rights, those different things, right to confront your accusers, to call witnesses for yourself, and to question witnesses against you. I mean, all these different things. Those are all individual liberties that here in America we are pretty adamant about protecting. And so in our LIFT principles that we teach at Patriot Academy, we encourage the students to make sure when you look at a piece of legislation or a proposal or an idea, that you don't just think about the good that it does. You have to think about the unintended consequences that it will also do, because if you do something good but you're infringing upon people's individual liberties, then it's probably a bad idea. It might be something that you need to do it in a different way to not infringe on those individual liberties. But of course, then you have to start thinking about the fact that some things are necessary to infringe on liberty a little bit when you live in a culture and a society. I mean, I frankly used to have fast cars. I used to have a Cadillac Elante. I loved it, man. It was convertible Elante, and that thing would move. I mean, it would go. And I loved being able to go fast, and I wanted to go super fast. And maybe I did go 115, 120 once or twice. I would never admit to that, but perhaps I did that, and it was quite fun. But, you know, I don't have, even though I have this individual liberty idea of how fast I want to go, it's probably, have this Tom Cruise thing. I feel the need, I don't know, it's a movie I've stuck in my head from my younger days. Need for Speed, baby. But anyway, I like to go fast. But I don't have, I should not be able to take that individual liberty and say I'm going to go 120 miles an hour in a school zone in complete disregard to the other liberties, the other individuals and their liberties in that community. So when you're in a community, your individual liberties will sometimes be, the way Webster put it in that 1828 dictionary, it's the difference between a pure liberty in a natural state, if you were on that island by yourself, and your liberty whenever you're in a community and in a civil society. So as I was about to say, sometimes your liberty will be slightly infringed. And what he said was that you should only do that when it's absolutely necessary for the protection and the safety of the community. When it's expedient for the safety and the interest of the society or the community or the entire nation, that's when you limit that natural liberty. So I should be, I think, limited and not allowed to go 120 miles per hour if I still had the Cadillac Elante. I can dream. I can still think about what it was like to drive a fast car before I had, wife and four kids, and now it's a Suburban that doesn't go quite so fast, or my pickup truck, which is, it still goes pretty good. It's got a Hemi in it, so it's pretty decent. But anyway, the idea is that your individual liberties, you want to protect those, but you got to realize that they will be, to some extent, limited whenever you live in a society. So limited government and then individual liberties. Make sure we don't infringe on those beyond what is absolutely necessary for the safety and protection of the entire culture and society. And there are other individual liberties we could get into, but I want to move to the third topic before I run out of time, and that is free enterprise. So we got limited government, individual liberties, and then free enterprise. And friends, look, this is the key to America's success. It is this free enterprise system based on biblical concepts that you find in Matthew, in Timothy, in Thessalonians, in Luke, where profit is rewarded, skill is rewarded, labor is rewarded. These biblical ideas that your transactions, employer and employee, that should be between the employer and employee, not the government. The government should never tell you how much you should make, how much you should be paid for a particular product or service, unless you're providing it to a government entity that's putting out a bid to pay for that. That's different. But it should never tell you that if you're going to, let's say you're going to build a house for me, government shouldn't tell you how much you should get paid. It shouldn't set a minimum on what you get paid, and it shouldn't set a maximum on what you get paid. It should be completely outside of that equation. That should be between you and me. It should be between the employer and the employee. That part of free enterprise is very, very important, because that's what will drive people to succeed. It will drive people to want to do better for their family and make more, so they'll get more skills, they'll work harder, they'll put in more time and more equity and more of their sweat equity and all of those things. And the reward of labor is so important. It's so important for government to not take. Here's how Jefferson put it: the government should not take from the mouth of labor of one to give to another, to literally steal from you and give it to someone else, because it would then discourage you from working hard, and it would actually encourage others to not work at all, because if they're going to get their way paid for by you working hard, why would they work, right? And then as a result, you stop working because your rewards are being taken and given to someone else, and then no one's working, and that's how economies fall apart. It happens all the time when socialism is introduced into a culture and economy. And sometimes it takes years, because sometimes initially socialism feels good and looks like it's working, because all of a sudden you have all this money being spent as it's being taken away from those that work to earn it. But every single time it ends up destroying an economy and destroying a country. So our founders said, no, we don't want to go that route of socialism. We believe in free enterprise.
We believe in people working hard. And of course, Benjamin Franklin called it a free market is the means under God, which means ethical capitalism, ethical free enterprise. It's the means under God of establishing the freedom of our country entire and of handing it down complete to posterity. Vitally important that we have free enterprise in our culture. It's what produces such great, great results. We have been marching away from that for many years in America. We've been creating more and more government regulation, more and more government telling you how much you should pay for a product, what features would be on that product, making you now buy things that, that you may or may not want to buy. It's just it's a march towards socialism. It's critically hampering our economy, and we need to move away from it. And we can do that. I mean, these principles that I'm talking about, these LIFT principles, as I said, they work every time they're tried. I love how Congressman Bob McKeown puts it. He says, the only problem with these principles, they only work every time they're tried. The good news is they do work every time they're tried. So we can come back to these principles. We can get government out of the marketplace, and we'll see it once again thrive. You should be able to work as hard as you want to work, make as much as you want to make. You should be rewarded for your work, and you should have the freedom to fail. That's a whole nother talk. We talk about that in National and Personal Exceptionalism. Hope you have that talk. If you don't, get it at our website today at rickgreen.com. But that freedom to fail is vital. It is vital if you want to have a thriving, prosperous economy and country. So free enterprise, that third principle. Limited government, individual liberties, free enterprise. The last one is timeless truths. What do I mean by that? Timeless truths. It means that there are certain principles and truths, moral absolutes, that don't change, and that if you build your culture violating those principles, going against them, ignoring them, it will hurt your culture, and your culture will pay the price for that. But if you follow those timeless truths, if you actually take the advice, the instruction manual of the creator, if you will, the manufacturer of the product, in this case, human beings, and the creator of that product actually gave us a wonderful instruction manual, not just the Ten Commandments, but all throughout the Bible, great instruction on how to form a society, how to treat each other, how to deal with difficult situations. And the Founding Fathers of America were so steeped into the Bible. Not that every Founding Father was an evangelical Christian or anything like that. Most of them absolutely were Bible believers. Most of them absolutely were Christians. But some of them weren't, and a small handful of them. None of them were atheists like we think of today or deists like we think of today. They all believed that there was a God. They all believed that God was involved in our daily lives. And so they paid attention to this instruction manual said, how should we form society? How can we look at history and look at other cultures and societies and what they did that worked well and what they did that did not work well? And they found these timeless truths, these moral absolutes of right and wrong, to be so true that they actually pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor based on those truths. I mean, think about the language of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That means they're obvious. They're right there in nature. The paragraph before that in the Declaration talks about the laws of nature and nature's God. They're saying we hold these truths to be self-evident. We can see this throughout history, throughout different ways that cultures and societies were formed and laws that they passed. And we know that if you follow these truths, you get good results. If you ignore these truths, you get bad results. So they said we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So right there, they sum up the timeless truths. And let's not forget that right there, that concept of moral absolutes and the idea that there is a creator, that's who gives us our rights. And George Washington was so adamant on this particular timeless truth that he said you couldn't be a patriot if you subverted the great pillars of religion and morality. He was watching the French Revolution when he gave this speech. It was his farewell address, and he had noticed the French trying to get what we had. They wanted liberty. They called it libertas. They wanted to live in freedom and liberty, but they wanted to do it without God, without religion. They killed all the priests. It led to the guillotine and absolute chaos, and he's watching it happen. And he's thinking to himself, what's different between what we have and what they have? What's different between what we did and what they're trying to do? And the difference was, he said, of all the habits and dispositions which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality, that they're indispensable supports, and that in vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who would work to subvert these great pillars. In other words, he's saying you gotta have that religion and morality. Why? Because without morality, you can't have liberty. I mean, let's just think about it. When we talk about the Lyft principles, when we talk about timeless principles of liberty, how much liberty do you have if you live in a society, in a culture, in a community where there's no morals? How do you even walk from your car to the grocery store or from the grocery store back to your car late at night without being robbed, without being raped, without being killed, without people stealing stuff from you? You can't. When there's no morality, you have no liberty. Because if there's no morality in the culture, then the government has to save us from ourselves, and you got a policeman on every corner or stationed in every home, and all of a sudden now you have totalitarianism in order to just keep us from killing each other. And so you can't have liberty if you don't have morality. And you get that morality, Washington said, from religion. It teaches us right from wrong. It teaches us those timeless truths, those moral absolutes. And that's why if you have a secular government, it won't be limited. Because when you get God out of the equation and you don't have religion influencing and being salt and light in a community, in a culture, and if you just go totally secular, now you have no concept of right and wrong. Anything goes. Everything's okay. It's just, you know, whatever's popular at the time instead of what's actually timelessly true. It's whatever's popular in that particular day, whatever the latest fad is. And so government being secular becomes more and more overpowering, overbearing in our lives. It can't be limited because the people are not moral and the people are not limiting the government and they're not controlling themselves. So that timeless truth concept begins with the idea that you got to have morality. You got to have those moral absolutes. And we don't have time in our talk to go into a lot of these. I mentioned some of those from Jefferson's first inaugural address. We go into a lot more of them in our other teachings and other programs like Constitution Alive and some of our others. But I don't even think I have to go into detail. You can look at the culture right now, and you just look around you. You pick up a newspaper. You and no, that's old school, right? You just log on to your favorite website for news, whatever that might be, and you just look at what's happening in the culture. You look at the unrest. You look at the riots. You look at the fights. You look at the degradation of women and the just the way that now anything goes and everything's okay and we don't even know what biology tells us about what a man is and what a woman is anymore. I mean, everything is up in the air. We're on shifting sand. We're on sinking sand. I mean, it's all changing on a daily basis, and it's creating this chaos in our culture. And as a result, now we have some of our timeless truths that we find in our other principles of individual liberties and free enterprise. And now we're violating those things by telling people in business how they're going to run their business and making them do business and taking their art and their gift and their talent and forcing them to participate in things that are violating their very conscience. We're being told that things that we know are wrong are actually right. We're being lied to about all of these different things, and it's dramatically changing the culture, and it's all because we're running from truth. We're running from those timeless truths. So if we want to have a good culture and a good society, we got to use those four principles of limited government, individual liberties, free enterprise, and timeless truths. I want to close out, if I can, with actually a quote from a comic book. Is that okay? I mean, I know I always quote founding fathers for you, and I'm always telling you about different founders and things in history, but I got to admit, I'm a little bit of a comic book fan. And this quote, actually a quote from a comic book. Is that okay? I mean, I know I always quote founding fathers for you, and I'm always telling you about different founders and things in history, but I got to admit, I'm a little bit of a comic book fan. And this quote comes from, of course, the greatest comic book hero of all time, Captain America. I bet you knew that was probably my favorite. But here's what Captain America said. It's actually in a Spider-Man episode, comic episode, but it's when Captain America's talking to Spider-Man, and he says this. He says, it doesn't matter what the press says. Doesn't matter what the politicians or the mob say. Doesn't matter if the whole country decides that something wrong is something right. This nation was founded on the principle and the requirement that we stand up for what we believe, no matter the odds or the consequences. When the mob and the press and the whole world tell you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree next to the river of truth and tell the whole world, no, you move. You see, friends, we need timeless truth. We need people that are willing to stand up and say there is a right and wrong, there is truth, there are principles that work and principles that don't work. There are positive things that will help our community, that will bring us together, that will reunite us, that will create prosperity and freedom and liberty and all these things. Those are principles that we can get behind and we can stand for, and we're going to stand for them. And when others come along and try to take those away and change those and lie to us about those things, we've got to say, No, you move. No matter how many people say that something wrong is right, we're still going to stand for truth. I got to tell you, it was interesting. In one of the Captain America movies, they actually had a little bit of this speech from Captain America given through one of the other characters, actually at a funeral. And the person giving the speech only gives part of it, and they don't even use the best line. They don't even talk about planting yourself like a tree next to the river of truth. They leave out that word truth. We're not going to leave it out. We're going to talk about truth because we know there are principles that work and principles that don't. We're going to stand for the ones that do. Timeless principles, folks. This is just a quick crash course on those four basic principles we teach at Patriot Academy. I hope you'll begin to look for those as you watch the news, as you hear stories, as politicians promise certain things or they propose certain things, as certain laws are passed, as decisions from the court are handed down, all those things. Hope you'll measure each of those things by those four very simple principles: limited government, individual liberties, free enterprise, and timeless truths. The LIFT principles we teach at Patriot Academy, hope you'll teach them in your home. I'm Rick Green. Thanks for joining me today here as we talk about these principles. Now take those principles, go out there and teach them to your friends and family, and we can restore our constitutional republic.